What's up, everybody? It's your boy True Element 78 in the building with
your one and only reigning defending Mondo Lucha Hall of Famer, Mr. Mondo Lucha, Mr. Turner Hall, the X-Man, Xavier Mustafa.
And everybody's favorite narcissist, the natural Chris Black.
And you call yourself Mr. Turner Hall, you're pretty much on the money now. You are officially the Big Show of Mondo Lucha.
He didn't turn, did he?
Oh, we'll talk about that in just a second. But first, I want to welcome everybody to this edition of Saturday Night Slamcasters. This is your episode for November 25th, 2021. Oh, hold on. Did I say 25th? 26th. Is that right? I'm looking at the wrong calendar.
One more day. 27th.
The 27th. I'm looking at the wrong calendar. It's been a wild week, you know, stuff full of that turkey, stuff full of that ham, stuff full of that dressing and macaroni and cheese. I know Xavier Mustafa had a seafood Thanksgiving. What were you stuffed full of?
That sounds like an inappropriate comment. But, you know, I did some fried catfish. I did some lobster mac and cheese. I did some baked salmon. I did some banana pudding and a amazing cheesecake.
And we know Chris Black over there had the macaroni with the raisins in it.
Shit.
The potato salad with the imitation crab.
I made my own baked mac and cheese. Brought some dressing, even though I was the only one that probably ate it. Banana pudding. And green bean casserole, even though I don't eat that shit.
So, yeah, I hope everybody had a great holiday out there. Hope your weekend is going well as well. Thank you for joining us here on Saturday Night Slamcasters. But yeah, this week we had tons of great wrestling. I guess Chris Black has already kind of hinted at before we went on the air that he didn't think it was a bunch of great wrestling. But we had Survivor Series, which I thought was a pretty good show. We had a great episode of AEW Dynamite. We had, since we recorded last time, we also had Hangman Adam Page winning the AEW championship from Kenny Omega. So it's been a lot of great things going on. But before we get into that, we had Mondo Lucha happen this week, the return of Mondo Lucha after a 2-year hiatus. And our very own Xavier Mustafa was on this show. And on the last Mondo Lucha show, he turned heel. But for some reason, he was babyface this time. What's going on, Mustafa?
It's because, you know, things change, you know.
It's been 2 years, you know, I guess.
Yeah, you know, COVID and everything, you know, makes people look at things differently, you know. So, good guy now, yeah.
How did it feel to be back out there in front of the fans in that capacity? I know you've done some Legacy Pro shows for yourself, but how did it feel to be back in front of the Mondo Lucha crowd?
Absolutely amazing. You know, not to, you know, discredit any other crowd, but Mondo Lucha is one of the best. They love everything. They just love wrestling. You know, just, it was amazing.
Did you kind of feel like CM Punk coming back to Chicago?
You know what? That would be a good comparison. I would say yes.
We got to get Chris Black on a Mondo Lucha show one day.
You just walk out on stage and people lose their shit. It's a great
thing. But let's get into our church announcements. And then I also have a church announcement to add in on that. So what do you guys got going on? I know yesterday was your Black Friday brawl. So what's the next thing for Legacy Pro, Mustafa?
Well, Legacy Pro Wrestling will be returning to Buena Vista Banquets and Restaurant, located on 75th in Oklahoma, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on Friday, January 21st, for a showdown at the Buena Vista. So tickets will be on sale probably by next Saturday at LegacyProWI.com or Facebook.com/LegacyProWI.
I got nothing. My next wrestling show won't be until the next Legacy show, pro wrestling show. It's probably for the best too, because I'm dealing with some health shit that I need to get figured out.
Speaking of health shit that needs to get figured out, that is one of my announcements. I got some health things going on that are going to take me away from the podcast for a while. I may make some appearances on some shows here and there. And I'm thinking about starting a series on the YouTube channel exclusively in that time as I try to reclaim my health and get back to a respectable shape and health and weight and all of those different things. So in the meantime, my two co-hosts here, Xavier Mustafa and Chris Black, are going to be holding down the fort. Now, before you hit that unsubscribe button.
I expect subscriptions to go through the roof, but that's just me.
With that announcement, I will be coming back in 3 to 6 months. But yeah, as of right now, I'm going to be stepping away. Like I said, I may pop up here and there, maybe for some prediction shows or something major happens. But I have to take this time and really reconfigure myself and refocus myself and come back better for you guys. I'll just leave it at that. So that is what a very
well, on behalf of me and Chris Black, we hope that the vaginoplasty goes well, and we hope that you get all the sand out of there so when you come back you're more refreshed and ready to go.
Well, look, if I had to take time off to do that, that would make me weaker than Chris Black, because he had his 2 years ago and he didn't miss a beat.
I just say, so you took up my recommendation, right?
Nah, I didn't take up your recommendation just yet. Still under consideration. You know, I'm trying to get those free flights to Dubai and stuff like you, so. But yeah, so, like I said, I'll be gone for 3 to 6 months. Hopefully, I'm back sooner rather than later. We got a lot of wrestling to cover. And actually, at the top of the show, I know it's going a little bit out of order from what the syllabus that we had laid out, fellas, but we didn't get to talk about this on the last show. ROH pretty much ceasing, well, not pretty much, they are ceasing operations as of January 1st, and they're letting all of their contracted stars out of their contracts, which has resulted in already one of those contracted stars appearing over on AEW and one Jay Lethal. So what do you guys think about ROH pretty much shuttering? They said for about 4 months they're supposed to come back in April, retool. They even used the word coming back as a 2.0 version of themselves, which we see how that's going when it comes to NXT. What are you guys seeing for ROH?
Well, my understanding is that when they come back, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think they're going to have anybody sign for any type of contracts. So that might solve some of the money issues, like if they pay per appearance, which could be good, which could be bad, because that way all those people that was released from their contract, as long as like AEW or whoever else they work for doesn't mind them getting bookings from Ring of Honor, then I guess that's not really going to be a big deal. But when you release people like oh my God, I'm lost for words, right? Jay Lethal. And he goes to AEW. What if he does extremely well, which I expect him to do, and then he's just like, you know, I like Ring of Honor, but AEW takes, you know, priority now. So they might have shot themselves in the foot. I understand getting everything back in order, you know, and restarting 4 months from now to, you know, knock out the kinks or whatever it is to make your product better. Some people may or may not return. All that loyalty shit may go out the window.
I think right now we're on the precipice, so I think that's the right word, of overall contracts changing, kind of like, you know, the way the WWE and WCW did business before the Eric Bischoff era, and then they went to guaranteed contracts, and I think we're going right back to what they were beforehand, which I think is a good thing, because you know, you don't want anybody stuck anywhere they don't want to be with a long-term contract. And then as a business owner, you don't want somebody stuck in a long-term contract that you got to pay out a ton of money if you need them to go.
So you're saying we're returning to the actual independent contractor model?
I think so. I mean, WWE is already starting to do it with NXT now. Apparently when you get hired there, like you got a 90-day trial. And if you not doing what they need you to do, you're out of there. And then I think after that, I think you only get like a year extension or something like that. So,
you know what? And there's nothing wrong with that, because back in the, you know, old school days, the days of the territory, they brought you in. You had roughly, what, 6 weeks to get over? if you weren't over, sorry, you got to go. Can't use you.
And that's still better than the 3-week push that WWE is pushing these days.
Yeah, it is. But at least, but here's the thing. Here's the problem with that, though. If that's what you're going to do with people, like, hey, you got 90 days to make it, you know, make it happen, basically, then you got to let these guys get over on their own. You can't straddle them with a bullshit gimmick and expect it to get over. If that's indeed what you're doing, if you expect these guys to get over, let them get over on their own then.
You're talking about not get a gimmick like Karrion Kross and Bearcat Lee?
Right. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah. The one thing that sucks about that, and we'll get into it a little bit later, is it does shrink the pond for professional wrestlers where they can go and, you know, really make the type of money that WWE was paying. Well, not even WWE was paying, because, you know, that's going to be the gold standard. That's the retirement plan, the golden parachute for a lot of wrestlers. That's the retirement home for wrestlers, basically. Not saying that the people there don't work hard. I'm just saying it's usually where, and I guess WWE is definitely trying to change that now, where they're saying they want younger people. They don't want to hire people in their late 30s and early 40s and beyond.
They don't want indie people, basically. Yeah. They want to develop themselves. And there's nothing wrong with that.
There is, but not for the WWE audience. Not for the WWE audience. They won't really care. They won't really notice a difference. It's going to keep on beating.
One of the last shows we did, it's pretty much, there's a line been drawn. WWE is sports entertainment, and nobody does it better than them. And then there's pro wrestling.
Yeah.
So that's so.
Yeah, so that's pretty much the way that it's going to go from now on. But when you've been at the top and WWE is doing all of these cuts and all of these releases, and these people are used to making a certain type of money and different things like that, you're going to have a lot of these people who are going to have to humble themselves now to come back to the indies, because AEW can't sign everybody. Neither, nor should they sign everybody or try to sign everybody.
Yeah, but there is options. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, at the end of the day, it's a business, and the business's job is to make money.
Right.
If you're not making money, you got to figure out a way to make money.
Right. But I'm just saying, there are people who in WWE, let's say they were making $300,000, $400,000 a year or up on a contract. And now, you know, I'm not saying ROH was paying that, but, you know, ROH was giving you national television. AEW gives you national television. Impact Wrestling gives you national television. So now one of those people who could still pay you maybe $100,000 a year for being a big name or whatever is gone. So it kind of shrinks the pond upon which a lot of these very talented people who WWE has released over the past, I think the number was like 180 wrestlers now have been released in the past year, 2 years by WWE. It's gonna leave a lot of people out there, not in the literal sense of being homeless, but when I say homeless, I mean they're not going to have a wrestling base where they can reliably get that money. You're going to have to get out here and hustle and find these independents and get back in touch with those roots. And then it's the people who literally were trained and brought up in the WWE system who aren't used to having that. One, Braun Strowman comes to mind when it comes to that. Like, Braun was never on the independent, so it's kind of him having to relearn and really see if he's actually passionate about wrestling, or was it really about the money? Because there's only so many marks out here with promotions and the money to pay these guys.
Correct me, remind me what he said about independent wrestlers. Because you're working an indie show, bro.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see or hear what he's getting for the Blizzard Brawl here, which is supposed to be his one show that he's doing this year.
He's going to get his asking price. Whatever that may be.
Yeah, but how many people out there are going to be willing to really pay that have promotions? So eventually that name that he has, and he's not even using the Braun Strowman, and he can't use the Braun Strowman name. His name is the Titan Adam Shear now on the independent. So,
I mean, okay, Great Lakes Championship Wrestling, they do pack it in because people do want to see the stars. I'm not trying to shit on the promotion. I'm just saying, if it was me, I would not overload these shows with a lot of stars. Because think about it. Do you think there's going to be that big of a difference in attendance if it was just Braun Strowman? Or if it was Braun Strowman, EC3, and whoever the fuck else they're booking? I think that just one or two names would be good enough. After a while, it's going to be start diminishing returns. That's just me. I could be wrong. That's just me.
Well, it's one of those things where they put themselves in the situation because that's been the MO for several years now. So I think if you do anything less than what you've been doing, that will hurt your crowd.
I guess. You don't think people would be interested in seeing Braun Strowman in like his first indie match? I don't know if that's his first, but
look, I'll put it like this. Like I said, we just had Mondo Lucha. Mondo Lucha doesn't overload their shows with a bunch of stars that everybody knows like that, that were like on TV like that. They have one or two that make an appearance, and a lot of it are surprises or the indie darlings that are out here that have been hitting the roads and grinding. They don't just go after, oh, this former WWE person, this former WCW person, this former Impact person. And Mondo Lucha sells out every single year. From what I've seen, the Blizzard Brawl pretty much sells out every single year as well. But they got two different models, but one is putting a lot more money out there. And like you said, I agree that I feel like it's the law of diminishing returns, because you could put Braun Strowman on that card and sell the same amount of tickets as putting Braun Strowman, EC3, and all these other people who now you have to pay whatever their rate is, instead of you being able to pay these guys who've been working for your promotion for the past year more money than they would make working all those other shows combined.
Yeah, before anyone tries to bury me or whatever, I know I'm not in dude's pockets, so I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm going to repeat that.
Yeah. But well, yeah. Go ahead.
I do want to say, as far as Mondo Lucha go, I mean, I'm a star, so.
You got that big payday?
All right, big so show.
Just want to correct you, you know, let you know they do have stars.
No, I specifically said outside stars like that were on national television. That's what I said.
Yeah, no, give you a hard time. But I will say, without speculating too much, that how do I work?
Because you've been on both shows. You've been on Mondo Lucha and you've been at Blizzard Brawl. I remember you went toe-to-toe with Ryback.
Yep. And I will say that there's money being spent, but most of it isn't coming out of the promoter's pocket. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
The mafia, baby. Allegedly. But anyways, yeah, moving on from that, like I said, also, you know who might be a good person to maybe try to get on would be Silas Young or the Beer City Bruiser to maybe discuss their thoughts on the whole ROH thing, but I don't know if that would be possible or not. So,
well, we can definitely reach out to Silas. I mean, me and Mustafa, we do know him. We've known him for a number of years.
Yeah, because I would just be interested to see, because they did say they're going to be people that they're going to continue to pay to hold on to, but they do have those people. Like, I wonder what Danhausen is going to end up. Could you see somebody? I know he's broken his leg or injured his leg now. He's going to be out for a while. But where do you see somebody like Danhausen ending up?
Or I can definitely like
Bandido. Go ahead.
I can definitely see Danhausen working in AEW. Maybe have, even if he's not there permanently, I'd like to have maybe a good program between him and Darby Allin. That's probably a quote unquote dream match, just because their gimmicks are just so kind of out there. I think he could also make some headway at Impact. Not so sure about New Japan, but definitely AEW and Impact.
I can see Impact. I couldn't really see AEW. I think it would be too much. Or they're going to put him with like Sting to be like the bastard Sting. Just because he wears the face paint like they did Darby Allin. I don't know.
I definitely see doing AEW. Not so much Impact.
I mean, hell, him and Darby Allin can even do like a tag team for a little bit. And once that runs dry, split them and have them feud. You can get a good 6-7 months out of that.
I would like to see, I don't even want to see the Darby Allin and Danhausen. I would want to see Jungle Boy Danhausen, and I would want to see Sammy Danhausen and Orange Cassidy Danhausen.
Yeah.
But who knows? Because AEW still has heat about not signing Warhorse, and we know how close Warhorse and Danhausen are. So I don't know. But all right, let's get to what the big talk of the town was this week, and then once we get to WWE, we'll talk about what's been going on with them, because you know we don't cover them as often anymore. But AEW, we finally have a feud for CM Punk with some meat on it. Last week, we had the first face-to-face between MJF and CM Punk. MJF was in the ring cutting a promo saying that there was nobody in that locker room that was better than him and could hold a candle to him in that ring. CM Punk's music hits. He walks down to the ring. MJF extends his hand, introduces himself as Maxwell Jacob Friedman. CM Punk looks at his hands, laughs, and walks away. And so on this week's episode of Dynamite, we were in Chicago, CM Punk's hometown. He comes out to go one-on-one with QT Marshall. And as soon as CM Punk steps on the apron, MJF's music hits, comes down. And this week we get the promo, the dream promo battle between MJF and CM Punk. And so I'm going to pass it over to Mustafa first to get his thoughts on the first face-to-face or second face-to-face, but first promo between MJF and CM Punk, the highs, the lows, and who he thought won.
So I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And this is why. One of the things I really liked is that when you realize that that whole promo was about 20 minutes long, typical of a Raw opening, but you didn't even realize it was 20 minutes long. It was great to watch. It was great to hear. This has kind of been the showdown we have been waiting on for a long time. A lot of zingers back and forth. Yeah, I loved it. Thought it was great.
Okay. So, I enjoyed it, but I do have a couple of things that I'm not going to say I have a problem with, but I just have some criticism. Number one, I think that it's a little too much, you know, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, like, you know, wink, wink, like the whole hype bomb. What else did he say? Hustle, loyalty, and respect line that he gave him. The whole your career in the UFC, which I like Punk's comeback when he was just like, you went for the low-hanging fruit. So I enjoyed the banter between these two. But I know that we want to see CM Punk actually have like some real competition. But I saw a post by, you know, one of these AEW haters, which I normally don't give them any, you know, too much thought. But I read it, and it's basically saying like CM Punk came in and he says that he wants to wrestle all of the young guys. And, you know, the hater was basically like, no, he wants to come and pin all the young guys. So I have to ask you, MJF beats Punk, right? Right? Like, that's the right thing to do? Because, I mean, come on now. If Punk beats MJF, he basically has buried him with the whole, okay, let me not throw that word around because that's a bit much. But when you start talking like, you know, I'm way better than you, you know, talking him down. Like, after I saw this promo, I'm just like, MJF has to win, right? And I'm not just saying like the first match, but he needs to win the program. Like, he has to.
Okay, so I let Xavier Mustafa go first because I didn't want him to say that anybody stole what he was going to say. So you pretty much just said what I was going to say. So watching this promo and listening to it, there was a lot of great lines in here. There was a lot of inside baseball. Obviously, we have a podcast, so we really understand a little bit of what they're talking about. you guys are in the industry. You guys also understand a lot of what they're talking about. And for the most part, I think anybody who's a huge AEW fan is going to understand what they were talking about. I think one of the best lines from CM Punk was, the only way you're going to be number one in this company is if we wait long enough for Tony to have a daughter and you marry her. I thought that was a fire-ass line.
I thought that was kind of low-hanging fruit.
Specifics. I love that he said, you know, oh, I finally know your name is Maxwell. I thought MJF stood for
my jealous fan.
That was my favorite line.
Yeah, cut me off, why don't you? But yeah, I thought that was hilarious.
And then cut you off. We're finishing each other's sentences. You know, I love you, bro.
It's a little weird.
But yeah, the one thing here, and I shout out to MJF. He went out there in front of the Chicago crowd. They're loud as hell. Obviously, he's been doing this for a while, but to be in the ring with someone he looked up to, we've all seen the picture of a young MJF getting an autograph from CM Punk. We've seen the video of MJF's bedroom where he did have a CM Punk poster on his wall. So this is somebody he's admired for a very long time. He's in CM Punk's hometown. He's going out there. He's got to cut this promo on him, this heel promo. He's got to get it over. And these fans are just all on MJF's ass, and he's not rattled at all. Still speaking with all of the utmost confidence. Now, with that being said, the shots that MJF were throwing at CM Punk, I felt like they were very childish in this exchange. And a lot of it was the low-hanging fruit and the very obvious kind of things when it comes to CM Punk. Like, he was doing the thing, oh, your breath smells like shit. You look like a meth addict. If I respect you being straight edge, but if I had a face like yours, I'd have to take 8 shots a day in order to look at myself in the mirror. Like, those things didn't really have anything to do with anything. I felt like CM Punk's points were way more poignant and way more biting. When it came to MJF, MJF's best line was the, you've been coming out here pretty much being a robot. Insert city here. Insert how happy you are here. You might as well be out here preaching hustle, loyalty, and respect. That was like his best line when it came to CM Punk. But CM Punk had so many more barbs when it came to MJF. And especially because I'll never forget the first time I saw on that All In show MJF for the first time. And I was like, he came out with the scarf and everything. I'm like, this guy's The Miz. And CM Punk went for that line. You're just a less famous Miz. And I was just like, wow, like they're just pulling out all of the things here. And so at the end of this, I felt the exact same way you did, Chris Black. I even turned to my friend when we were watching it together, and I was just like, MJF's got to win at the end of this, because I felt like CM Punk kicked his ass when it came to this promo. I kind of felt like he kind of buried MJF a little bit, but not in the sense, and I don't really want to throw that around. But just in the sense of, and I don't even going to say CM Punk did. I think AEW kind of hurt MJF a little bit. Because if you were tuning in here and watching this for the first time because you heard that CM Punk is going to have a face-off with this guy, and it's a dream face-off and all this different type of stuff, so you're tuning in, MJF is out there in CM Punk's hometown, so nothing he's really saying seems like it's getting over as much as what CM Punk is saying about him and the way they're all over MJF. I felt that at the end of this promo, MJF should have got something out of it. He should have knocked CM Punk on his ass, and CM Punk could have got back up or whatever. But I felt like something should have happened here instead of MJF just powdering out for him to get some of his heat back, because I felt like CM Punk kind of smoked him, especially the second half of CM Punk's promo, which was where a lot of the super biting lines came from. But I do feel that at the end of this, MJF has to win the feud. Like, he has to win it decisively, because yeah, I felt like CM Punk like kicked his ass when it came to the promo.
All right, let me throw in my 2 cents, because I thought everything with the promo was fine. I thought the way that it ended was fine. because it is not a program that's going to be ending next week. So you don't want to give everybody everything right now. I thought the stuff that he said was typical MJF. I mean, dude was talking about somebody's dead dad being in hell. He's talked about people, he wished that their uncle died instead of, or he, the person died instead of their drunk uncle. You know, shit like that. So he's gonna throw those low punches. So I don't think that should have been any different with him and CM Punk, because then that would have been odd. So I know you'd like to give AEW credit for quote-unquote long-term storytelling. Now, this one, I would say, is legit long-term storytelling versus that other stuff that you was giving credit to. But I digress.
Yeah, I agree. I think they should do this little dance around each other for a little bit before they actually lock up.
Okay, well, following that, CM Punk had a match with QT Marshall, and one of the things that CM Punk or MJF had said about CM Punk was how he easily beat Darby or whatever in his match or whatever, and then CM Punk came back, well, I didn't need a diamond ring to do it, to beat Darby. But then he had the match with QT Marshall. Now, do you think that CM Punk gave QT Marshall more than he should have, because we've seen QT Marshall lose to Cody in like 3 minutes, and I think him and CM Punk went about 10 minutes, and commentary was trying to play it up like, oh, he's been rattled by he was all warmed up and ready to go, then he was interrupted by MJF, and now he's kind of not in the mental state to have the match, so QT's kind of kicking his ass a little bit. Do you think that he gave too much to QT Marshall headed into a feud with MJF down the road?
I think he gave him too much, yes. I don't think it's going to affect, though, anything. It's typical AEW.
I think he kind of had to give him a little bit, because we're at the point where it's been pointed out that, you know, CM Punk is kind of like going through everybody. So if he would just, you know, I don't want to say squash him, but if he just would have pinned him in under like 5 minutes, you know, the detractors are going to start rolling their eyes like, oh, here we go. So, I mean, I think they had to like give him a little bit. And yeah, the commentary probably covered it up with the whole he's rattled by MJF.
To be honest, after they did a 20-plus minute promo, I don't even think he needed to wrestle. I understand they're in Chicago, so that probably was the right thing to do to have him wrestle, but I don't think it was really necessary. And especially to have a competitive match with QT Marshall that hasn't had a competitive match since he's been there, and nobody cares about QT Marshall. It was a waste.
I care about QT.
Why?
Hey, I care about you. And I ask myself that all the time. All right, so also one of the big matches that was on the show this week was based off of last week's confrontation between Daniel Bryan and one Hangman Adam Page, the AEW World Champion. As I said earlier, he won the belt from Kenny Omega. And so Bryan Danielson comes out and he's saying how disappointed he is to be standing across the ring from Kenny Omega, because he didn't think that Hangman Adam Page could get the job done. So he's getting booed, and everybody's like, oh, this is a heel turn from Bryan Danielson. It's like, well, he never came out really as a babyface or as a heel. He's just been kicking people's heads in. Like, he's kind of been acting kind of assholish for since he came into AEW, but everybody was just cheering him as a babyface. So I don't necessarily think it was a heel turn. I think this week was more of the heel turn than anything. So last week, like I said, him and Hangman have their face off, going back and forth, talking about having a match. But Bryan already has a match scheduled with Evil Uno. He beats Evil Uno's ass and he hops on the mic and he says that he's going to kick the heads in of every member of the Dark Order until he gets to Hangman Adam Page. And so he's like, next week we're in Chicago and there's a member of the Dark Order who's from Chicago named Colt Cabana. So he's going to kick his head in the following week. So cut to this week.
I just want to know, does that include negative one?
That'd be the ultimate heel move.
He set the entire Dark Order, so I think that includes him and what's her name? Ty Conti? Is that the one that's in the Dark Order?
Ty Conti's not a member of Anna Jay.
Yeah, her too.
The ultimate heel move. Now that's when Brie Bella comes in. Brie Bella's going to kick the head in of Anna Jay.
Oh, God. I hope. Never mind. Let me shut up.
He's still trying to get that WWE job. He's waiting for John Laurinaitis. Hey, kid. Budget cuts are over. You want to come try out? Braun Breaker versus Xavier Mustafa. Who goes over, Chris Black? Who goes over?
Mustafa.
You got paid yesterday. You ain't have to say it.
I'll put Braun Breaker over. I'll put him over. You know, but he just got to cut a math promo. That's all I'm gonna ask. Now listen.
Oh, okay.
That's my only requirement.
I'm gonna save that for NXT because what the fuck? Anyway, keep going.
Okay. So cut to this week. We have Colt Cabana versus Bryan Danielson, and Bryan Danielson delivers on his promise to kick the head in of Colt Cabana. He even knocked out a couple of his teeth. And he submits him, and when the match is over, he doesn't let go of the hold immediately. He gets on the mic. He starts cutting a promo saying, next up is Atlanta, and there's a couple members of the Dark Order from Atlanta, so whoever wants to come out there and get their heads kicked in, accept the challenge, and he'll see them in Georgia next week. Which brings out Hangman Adam Page, who says that he doesn't have to keep hurting members of the Dark Order. They can go ahead and get this match going right now. Bryan Danielson, it's kind of funny because I was like, they're making Hangman Adam Page look a little foolish, in my opinion. He comes down there. He says they don't have to wait. They can have a match right now. And Bryan Danielson stops him like, hey, look, I just had like a 10-minute match with Colt Cabana. So how advantageous of you to come down here and challenge me after I've had a match? So, no, you're not going to have your match here. And so Adam Page says, well, I'm not going to leave here without a fight. So he puts the belt down and him and Bryan Danielson come to blows, and with Bryan Danielson powdering off. What do you guys think about this feud so far? And do you still feel do you feel like Hangman Adam Page is the guy yet?
The jury's still out on that, if he's going to be the guy or not. I didn't like the fact that he's going to come down and challenge somebody after a match. That is very non-babyface of him. So I didn't like that.
First off, if anyone knocks out some teeth, we might have some heat.
Yeah, but when did that happen in the match? Because I didn't even...
Stomped him.
The face stumps.
Oh, he's doing the stumps? Okay. Well, yeah, then, you know what? I'm kind of going to have to blame that on Colt Cabana then, because you shouldn't be nowhere near your mouth. You should have your head turned.
True that.
So.
Remember that not match, Mustafa, when I do that to you.
I got to say that I am pleased, because I had some worries about Bryan Danielson going up against Hangman Page. Don't nobody want to see face versus face. I'm glad that Bryan Danielson is so versatile, and he's a fucking great heel, and he just stepped right into that character, right into that mode. And I think Hangman, with the victory over a great match with Bryan Danielson, will help solidify him as the guy. Help solidify him. Not officially making him the guy, but it would help. It's going to help.
I think that when they do have their match, I think they should tease the time limit draw, and then whoever's going to win wins it with like a minute left. I think that's what's going to get Hangman Adam Page over, if he can go out there and go 29 minutes with Bryan Danielson and pull out the victory. That's what I want to see from it. What do you guys think about that?
I'd say less than that. Like, I'd say get it down to like 30 seconds or less. They do it in New Japan. Just saying.
Oh, you're saying 30 seconds left in the 30-minute time limit?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Well, I was just giving them buffer because, you know, that stuff can get messed up. So, yeah.
I know what you're saying. Not everyone can beat Japan and can't pull off a 29-minute, 47-second match. I know.
Yeah, but yeah, I think that if Hangman can go out there and show he can hang with a Bryan Danielson for almost the full 30 minutes, I think that can help really elevate him and get him over. And he's got to be bleeding.
Hangman, probably.
Another thing I like about AEW, they don't drop storylines. And even when they have gaffes, they'll come back around and correct them. So now, first of all, let's talk about they had a great women's match out there. I've been kind of worried about Jamie Hayter because her showings hadn't really been that great. But you put her out there with somebody like Thunder Rosa, and they had a hell of a women's qualifier match for the TBS title. I thought that Jamie held up her end of the bargain, and Thunder Rosa did way more than her part. It is kind of funny. All of Jamie Hayter's comeback spots and heat were coming during the commercial breaks and picture in a picture. But whenever it was television time, full screen, Thunder Rosa was on her ass. I was like, they worked pretty damn stiff in this match. Or snug. If you guys watched the match, you could tell me which one of those you think, if it was stiff or if it was just snug. But they, they were going at it out there. It resulted in Britt Baker getting involved, going for a super kick on Thunder Rosa while Jamie Hayter held her. Thunder Rosa escaped, and Britt Baker ended up super kicking Jamie Hayter, which Thunder Rosa took advantage of, pinning Jamie Hayter to move on in the women's qualifier for the TBS championship tournament. So then we get a segment backstage where it's Friendsgiving, which is Britt Baker, Rebel, and Tony Schiavone having a Thanksgiving feast, I should say. Jamie Hayter's not around because of what happened earlier. And Britt Baker's talking about how thankful she is for everybody and thankful for herself having the women's title. And Tony Schiavone says he's thankful for their friendship and everything. But he has to make an announcement that Tony Khan has signed a match between Riho and Britt Baker, in which if Riho, he called it a Black Friday deal. Yeah, Black Friday deal. That if Riho can beat Britt Baker, then she will get a future opportunity at the AEW Women's Championship, because back in the women's over-the-top rope battle royal they had, Riho was never eliminated. She went under the bottom rope or through the middle rope or something like that to hit the floor. And so they're circling back to that. And Britt Baker says, well, it's either a number one contenders match. There's no Black Friday deal. If she wants a Black Friday deal, she can go to the mall like everybody else. And then Tony's telling her, like, well, I've made the announcement. It's already signed, so we can end it here. And he's waiting for Britt Baker to say DMD. And she's like, no, there is no DMD. You ruined it. You ruined Thanksgiving and you ruined the 4th of July. You're not going to be invited to the Christmas party. And I love that. I like that segment. What do you guys think about the segment? Like,
this is one of those things that's weird about wrestling. Like, who has Thanksgiving dinner like that where everybody sits on one side of the table? And, like, I just think that's kind of funny, but...
You never seen The Last Supper?
Even then, like, why couldn't nobody sit on the other side of the table, like...
For the gram. They got to do it for the gram. You got to get everybody in the picture, bro.
Like, I always think that's weird, like, when somebody's, like, is on a date, and then both of them sit on one side of the table, and the other side of the table is just empty. Like, why wouldn't you sit across where you can actually look at the person in their face instead of, like, turn and look at them? But that's wrestling. Just, like, people awkwardly stand, it's perpendicular to where, to a TV, and then they kind of turn their neck all the way to look at it. Like, who watches TV that way?
Well, they kind of make fun. They made fun of that in this segment pretty much because the TV was, like, behind them. So they're all facing forward. They all had to turn around and look at the TV.
We'll do that next time. I'm watch TV, I'm just going to stand next to it and look back at it. See how that works.
Yeah,
so, but I thought the segment was okay. All right, they're bringing Riho back. All right. I just wish they. I feel like their women's division is just all over the place.
What did you guys think about the match between Jamie Hayter and Thunder Rosa? As I said, did you think it was snug or was it stiff or was it just a good ass match?
Thunder Rosa is fantastic. She they need to continue moving forward with her. I would have Bitbreaker. I would have Thunder Rosa. I would have Serena Deeb, and that's it. Then get rid of all the other women.
Well, this match was definitely snug. We'll talk about a stiff match later on. But yeah, this match was definitely snug. I think that's how Thunder Rosa works, which is fine as long as, you know, both people are cool with it. I liked it, though. Thunder Rosa is, like Mustafa said, she's incredible in the ring.
Only been doing it for 5 years.
I do want to add, I would also add that bitch onto my roster of women, Jade Cargill. And I would say, and I'm going to mess up her name, Red Velvet. I got it right this time, but I'm fucking it up.
Well, Red Velvet saved, no, Jade Cargill saved Red Velvet's life on Rampage last week. So Red Velvet went for a dive, one of those Sasha Banks dives, and she was going to get caught in the ropes. And Jade Cargill ended up actually like hitting her to stop her from crashing and burning onto the floor. So, I don't know. The only thing about Red Velvet, we talked about it on here, she moves a little bit too fast in the ring. She's got to slow down sometimes. So next up, Dante Martin has turned his back on Lio Rush and has signed with Team Taz. Why in the blue blazing hell would he do that? Chris Black, thoughts?
Too soon. I think that him and Lio Rush was pretty good together. But, I mean, I guess if that means Dante Martin, Lio Rush match, okay, or program, that's cool. But Team Taz, not known for winners. So, I don't know. I didn't like it.
This segment was super awkward to me. I'm like, why would he sign with Team Taz? That makes absolutely no sense.
I said the same thing. Him and Leo been winning matches.
Right. And I would say, okay, maybe it'll make more sense if they sign both of them. Or maybe they're going to do something where maybe they offer something to Lio Rush and then they be the tag team baby faces on Team Taz. And then that causes a problem because Team Taz want to be dirty. And Lio Rush and Dante Martin don't want to be. I don't know where they're going with this, but
what's gonna happen? Brian Cage is gonna team up with Lio Rush to take on Team Taz.
Hated it.
No. Please God, no.
Isn't Brian Cage supposed to be like signing with WWE or something? Like, won't you get on top of that?
You get what you deserve when you sign to WWE.
Yeah.
Brian Cage's wife is causing havoc in his life right now.
He's the only guy I would encourage to go ahead and go to WWE.
Isn't that every wrestler's life? Their wife is always causing havoc for them in their professional life.
No comment.
So, yeah, I don't know why he would sign with Team Taz. Like you said, not known for winners. The only person in there that's won anything was Ricky Starks, and he won it within Team Taz, a belt that's not even recognized by the company. Which, obviously, go ahead.
So what are they going to do when the other Martin brother come back?
That's probably what's going to happen. It's going to be Lio Rush, the other brother. I hate calling him the other brother.
Darius Martin.
So Darius Martin and Brian Cage against Team Taz, which is going to be Hobbs.
Do you really think it's Brian Cage, or are you just fucking with me?
No, it's going to be Brian Cage. It makes sense because this is how we're going to get Hook in the ring. It's going to be Lio Rush, it's going to be Darius Martin and Brian Cage taking on Team Taz of Ricky Starks, Hobbs, and Hook. And if I'm right on that, I need to start my own Fed. That's what I'm not saying it's gonna be good. I'm just saying that I know which direction they're already headed in with it. But
they should have just rode this Dante Martin Leo Rush train until Darius came back, and then it makes sense for Darius to kind of jump ship or whatever, or maybe they tease it, make it seem like Darius is gonna, you know, do the old school Tatanka Lex Luger with the $1 million team, where it ends up being they look like they're recruiting Darius and he's getting accused, but then Dante's, you know, really is the one that does the turn. But whatever, that's just wishful thinking.
Right.
I just don't get how they went from him looking all confused when they wanted him to sign to eagerly signing. Like, was Hook's chips that good that, you know, he signed that way?
He was like poison. Mind control.
I don't guess.
Either that or he just didn't want to get beat up every week by team's ass. Because that's pretty much been Team Taz's whole MO. What did they do with CM Punk every week? Oh, you don't want to sign with us? Well, we're just going to beat you up. All right. And then we had the other big segment of AEW Dynamite. Not trying to hit every single segment, so this will be the last one. Was Cody Rhodes getting completely booed out of the building in Chicago. He even threw his weight belt into the crowd, and they threw it back into the ring, almost hitting Ref Aubrey. Like, everybody was confused. It enraged Andrade. He threw the belt under the ring then. But everybody also in the ring was kind of laughing, and Cody was super confused. And it really just brought back those vibes of, I don't know if you guys remember when it happened to John Cena. He threw his shirt into the crowd, and he threw it back at him.
Yes.
CW One Night Stand. Yeah.
So, do you guys think that Cody is really playing the delusional baby face right now, where he's really the hit? Because we always comment about him coming out in his The Boys gimmick outfit. And I've never watched the show, but you guys always said he's Homelander is like a superhero, but he's kind of a villain or asshole. He thinks that he's the good guy.
Jeez. You never watched the show?
No. So describe it to me. Like, what is Homelander?
So Homelander is basically that universe's Superman. However, this whole world is like, okay, what if superheroes were assholes? That's basically what the series is about. And Homelander is the biggest asshole.
Yeah.
And so Cody comes out in this gimmick every week.
He plays himself like a baby face, but he's straight up a heel. Cody, if that wasn't the direction that they wanted to go, that's definitely the direction that they're going now. Like, I don't know how true it is that he was like, oh, I'm not going to turn heel. That might have been a shoot. But because of this shit, nah, bro, you have to turn heel. You have to. Otherwise, you're no good as a baby face with them booing you and throwing your shit back at you.
If I was booking AEW, what I would do is I would ride this train out. Don't give the fans what they want. Just let them be just like they did with John Cena, just like they did with Roman Reigns. Just keep forcing it. Then when the crowd finally is like, okay, this is not going to happen, and they start maybe giving them that baby face respect, that's when you do it.
See, what I've noticed is AEW's been trying to be slick, too. They're not giving Cody one-on-one matches. They're putting him in there amongst baby faces who are over. And then Cody is always starting off the match, getting booed now, and everything. So they know what's going on. They're a company that does listen to the fans. So I'm wondering when this is going to pay off. Are they going to do what you said, just keep forcing it and forcing it? Or is it going to happen sooner rather than later? Because I do feel that they can't keep ignoring it in promos.
They can't. That kind of fucks up the dynamic of the show. If you're trying to push someone as a heel, but they're getting cheered because they're booing Cody Rhodes, it's not the response you're looking for. And like, again, if you have Cody Rhodes against Malakai Black, I'm sorry, Malakai Black's getting cheered.
And also, I think it's going to eventually start to hurt the baby faces who you're trying to immerse him or hide him in. So you're bringing him out there with the Lucha Brothers and Pac and everything. And obviously now we know there's going to be something between him and Pac because of the miscommunication that happened in this match with Cody knocking Pac out pretty much. So we see that it's probably headed in that direction. So I mean,
they had miscommunication before too.
Yeah, and it was a confrontation, and they kissed and made up. So, but this is two times in a row, and this is Pac.
Yeah.
I think that it goes. It already kind of betrayed Pac's character for him to come back and give him that opportunity, but he did give him the benefit of the doubt. Even in this instance, there's still the benefit of the doubt. But I think because of Pac's character that he set up, I don't think that Cody gets another opportunity to do it. And even if they do run it back, I think now this time it's going to be Pac having a quote-unquote miscommunication that hurts Cody.
That's what I'm saying. Do you think they're going to try to flip it? Like Mustafa was saying, they're trying to push him as a babyface and have Pac, quote-unquote, turn heel?
That's what I would think.
My opinion, which won't work. If they try that shit, it won't work.
Well, anything they try to do right now,
Pac would basically have to punt Cody Rhodes' new baby like Snitsky did. You know what I'm saying? In order for him to turn heel.
Yeah. So I don't really know. I think, like, we say it won't work, but it all depends on what the plan is. I think that the plan would be to try a bunch of things that don't actually work in the eyes of, like, us. Like, oh, they think they're slick by doing this. Be like, no, that was actually planned. Like, because Cody kind of has X-Pac heat right now.
No, he's got Rocky Maivia heat.
Okay, yeah, that'd probably be better right now. But I'm saying if they can't
die, Cody, die.
And again, just ride that wave to the end, and then when the crowd gets tired, then flip it. Don't do it any earlier. Don't give the crowd what they want.
Have you guys ever been in a promotion here where somebody had that Rocky Maivia heat?
Has there been someone where the crowd just shit on him? What was dude's name? Fuck. Hispanic dude, worked for MCW. I can't think of his name. I think the crowd shit on him. And that's because he just fucking sucked.
Yeah. Or have you guys ever been on a show here where somebody gave something to the crowd and the crowd gave it back?
I don't think so.
Never seen that, but indie guys, you know, we're broke, so we don't throw stuff to the crowd. We need it.
Not only that, like you have in the indies, I mean, you have the people that, I mean, I guess you have them at the big shows too. Like when I had my run as a heel in RCCW, like obvious heel, you know, and I'd get a lot of heat. But then you had the small corner of the crowd who wanted to be cool that would cheer. You know what I'm saying? So you had people that was trying to, I don't want to say hijack the show, but they're too cool for school.
Oh, yeah. Like me with Dark Match Mafia kicking Mustafa's ass. Oh, man. All right. Well, that was your AEW review, pretty much. There were other things that happened on the show. If you're not watching AEW, it is the best. Just so I don't have to have Chris Black say anything slick, the best version of American wrestling that you can watch in the United States.
Well, technically, NJPW Strong. No, I'm just playing. I agree.
I will say, I want to give credit where credit is due. AEW has had some stellar shows on Dynamite the past couple of weeks. Like, every once in a while, they have one of their, I'm going to say, old segments of, you know, random ridiculousness. But overall, the past couple of shows have been great. I don't know I know what's changed. They got better stars now. And they don't let a lot of crap on their shows.
Oh, yeah, so, one more thing, man. It looks like WCW had the battle for the letter T, and it looks like AEW is going to have the battle for title of best friends, where Bobby Fish and Adam Cole are going to be taking on the best friends minus Trent, because they had a segment arguing back and forth on who was really best friends. Yeah, I just had to throw that out there.
I'm 100% against Undisputed Era reunion in AEW. Don't do that shit. don't do that shit.
I'm totally okay with teasing it. I'm totally cool with that.
They can't resist it, man.
But you know what? I see them doing that and then them turning on the Bucks. And then I think that will be kind of interesting. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But
although it seems like Adam Cole is kind of teasing something with Kenny Omega.
Yeah, for leadership of the Elite, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, we'll see.
Now let's move over to WWE, who on our last episode we announced they had released 18 wrestlers, including Bearcat, Keith Lee, and Taya Valkyrie. And on that episode that we recorded, I mentioned I don't know what's going to happen to John Morrison. I feel he's next up on the chopping block. And little did I know, a week later, WWE will be releasing 8 more superstars, including John Morrison, Isaiah Swerve Scott, Top Dollar, Ashante the Adonis, Tegan Knox, Drake Maverick, Shane Thorne, and Jackson Ryker. Thoughts on these releases? We'll start with Xavier Mustafa.
They should have got rid of Jackson Ryker a long time ago. I don't know what they're waiting on for that dude. I'm shocked but not shocked with Hit Row being completely decimated. Like, when they let go of the girl, I was like, okay, they're keeping the guys on. Okay, and I thought they were a big fan of Top Dollar, but apparently not. And John Morrison, I'm really not surprised because they really haven't been doing much with him. Johnny Drip Drip. It's ridiculous.
You know, WWE already let you know what their moves are going to be going forward. They said if they can't see you main eventing WrestleMania, even though not everyone can do that, they have no need for you. Now, I'm wondering with the whole Hit Row thing, I wonder if they signed a main roster contract, because then that goes with the whole 90-day shit. I would hope WWE wasn't that petty. Bring him up, have him sign the main roster contract, get hit with a 90-day no-complete clause because you're just going to fuck you and let them all go. They didn't even give him a chance to get over, like, honestly, which that kind of sucks. Drake Maverick, I guess I saw that kind of coming. They released him before, and then they brought him back. Shane Thorne, yeah, he wasn't going nowhere. And fuck Jackson Ryker.
Did you guys see the Drake Maverick promo?
Yes. Fucking amazing.
That was great.
He showed you the depth of, like, his range. I'm not going to say, like, as an actor, but as a performer. It was fucking excellent. And I think that's motivating for anyone that just got released. Like, this isn't the end.
I mean, I saw on some Facebook group, somebody had posted, and it was like, oh, is he doing another one of their promos? I'm like, bro, watch it. Because it seemed like it was going to be that, but it was totally something different. And I thought it was pretty inspiring, to be honest.
Well, you saw John Cena repost it.
Oh, did he? No, I didn't see that.
Okay, yeah, he reposted it. John Morrison be released. That, I felt, was very egregious on WWE's part. So they released his wife. A week later, he's released, which got some insider news about that, which was that he kind of requested to be released because they had released his wife. The thing that sucks for them is they lived in California and they had relocated to Florida because they had both gotten hired there. And so no idea where they're going to end up now. Probably back in Impact, which I don't know if that's for better or for worse. I guess it's good for Impact. But I don't know. We shall see. AEW needs women. I don't think they need John Morrison. And I like John Morrison. But I don't see where he would fit over in AEW. I think that AEW could use a woman like Taya Valkyrie, though. So, Isaiah Swerve Scott. Where does he end up?
Impact. You know what? Oh, my God. Okay. Lord, forgive me. I'm not shitting on this brother at all. But But after I said Impact, I'm thinking, yeah, but you know what? Honestly, what's the difference between him and Chris Bay?
I was trying to think of his name when you said that. I was like, they already got Chris Bay.
Yeah. So I...
That's a tag team in the making, though.
Yeah, Chris Bay, Bullet Club, though, so...
Hey, shit. Bullet Club is like 37 people, so... Every time I turn around, I'll be like, this person's Bullet Club. Okay, all right.
Yeah, but it ain't hit that shitty NWO point yet.
I was just going to say, like, NWO, like...
And apparently... Hit Row was kind of released because Top Dollar called the front office after they fired B-Fab and was like saying that they were foolish, like that made up the group, like we need to have B-Fab or whatever. And he said, I guess standing up for yourself is being difficult in WWE.
I mean, it was foolish.
Well, also read something that Top Dollar apparently was hard to work with in NXT too. And then when he got to the main roster, the same stuff was happening. So it was like, yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? They've been putting this narrative out, everyone that they release.
Keith Lee was difficult to work with.
Yeah, Keith Lee, difficult to work with. Bray Wyatt, difficult to work with. Well, fuck, if you got me doing dumbass storylines, hell yeah, I'm going to be difficult to work with.
Yeah. I also think it's one of those things. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's one of those things, too, that's like, people have to realize when you're in a tag team, like, you got to be on your tag team partner because they can sink both of you.
Oh, facts. In a
situation where Top Dollar could have been the key that brought all of them down.
Not saying that he shouldn't have spoke his mind, because that's one of the things all the old heads like Stone Cold are saying, people don't stand up for themselves. Look what happens when you do.
And you know those guys, and you know those old school guys were difficult to work with because they wanted to hold on to their position.
Right.
But see, you got to get to the point, too, where you can do that.
True.
And what I mean by that is you can't come in the door day one and be like, okay, this is the way I want to do things. No, you can't do that. But once you get to a certain level, like take John Cena, The Rock, Stone Cold. They can walk in and then go into the center of the ring in front of a crowd and take a shit and won't nothing happen to them. They're in a position where nothing is going to happen to them. They're two bigger stars. They can dictate how things go. But Rocky Maivia couldn't go in there and do that.
Let me ask you a question.
A ringmaster couldn't go in there and do that. But
let's say, and put this in perspective, let's say at the peak of our, career or whatever, the Urban Horseman gets signed by NXT. T.C. Washington, Xavier Mustafa, Chris Black, and Sean Priest. We get on the main roster, and just, I don't want to just throw anybody else, but they say, okay, T.C. Washington, you're gone. We're going to feel a certain way about that.
Right.
And I would think that the rest of us would speak up like, hey, that was fucking dumb.
Yeah, and then also, I don't know if you guys have heard, so down at NXT, who would you say was the leader of Hit Row?
Swerve.
Okay. Yeah. And then on the main roster, they wanted to make Top Dollar the leader of Hit Row, which we saw in the one match they got to have on television. And in NXT, Top Dollar and Ashante were the tag team, but on the main roster, they were going to have Swerve and Ashante be the tag team, with Top Dollar being the single star. Do you guys even think that would have worked?
No, you can't have her. So in stables like this, you got to have your powerhouse, which is Top Dollar. And you got to have your Weasley, I guess you can say, character, which is your Isaiah Swerve Scott. Your Weasley character should always be the leader, just because that's the person that's going to, open their mouth and get everybody else in trouble. Or he's going to be the one that's going to be running away that everybody really want to get their hands on. If Top Dollar is that, like, that doesn't work. Because, Top Dollar, is he going to open his mouth and get his whole team in trouble? Probably not. That wouldn't be his character. Would he be somebody that everybody would want to get their hands on because they're a little Weasley babyface? No, because he's Top Dollar. He's a big dude. Like, everybody has their roles in stables, and Top Dollar being the lead is not it.
Right.
Where did Shane Strickland come from before? I can't remember. Was it ROH?
Shane Thorne?
No, Shane Strickland. That was Isaiah Swerve Scott before NXT.
Gorilla. What's it called?
Pro Wrestling PWG. Oh,
yeah, PWG.
Okay. Tegan Knox. That wasn't that surprising. Injury prone.
Shane.
Shane Thorne. They Slapjack, Slapnuts, whatever his name was. Yeah.
Slapnuts.
Wasn't really going anywhere, and fuck Jackson Riker, so.
Right.
The other big news was Vince McMahon was back on television with Cleopatra's Egg, which he said was not a prop from The Rock's new Netflix movie called Red Notice, which also at Survivor Series, they were celebrating the 25th anniversary of The Rock, showing highlights from The Rock's career. Everybody's thinking The Rock was going to make an appearance, and The Rock kayfabe the hell out of everybody, including in WWE. Didn't even have time to send in a video saying congratulations to himself on 25 years. So,
okay. Well, hold on. Mustafa, you want to go ahead? I'm about to snap.
Oh, no. Go ahead. Please do.
He's about to go, Ken Shamrock, get out of my way. No. I'm in my zone.
Dude, this is what WWE's problem is. If you knew The Rock wasn't going to come, you can put on social media, hey, celebrating 25 years of The Rock, and not mention it on the fucking show. No, you know what we get? We don't get The Rock. We get a goddamn egg, which was the focus of the fucking show and the following Monday night. Fuck WWE.
In their defense, that was a $100 million egg.
My ass. I got a bridge to sell. You interested in buying?
I was like, that was hilarious. I was like, so y'all got $100 million. This is before he said it was a gift from The Rock. They're like, oh, that thing's worth $100 million. Like, oh, that's what the budget cuts were for, so he could buy this egg. And then it's like, it came from The Rock. And then somebody looked up. There's like, so The Rock bought Vince McMahon $100 million egg with his $22 million valuation.
Right.
So as soon as he said $100 million, I was like, you know how you tell somebody's lying when they give you too much information?
Somebody needs to cut TikTok on that. You'd be like, it's worth $100 million, and it'd be, cap! That's cap!
Right, he could have just said a very expensive egg. I would have, because expensive could be anything. You know, if you broke, $5 is expensive. You know what I'm saying? Like, it could have been any value. But when he said $100 million, I said, bro, you could have said any number in the world. But it felt like Dr. Evil saying $1 million.
Yeah, like, that's just say a priceless. About. Priceless. That's all you had to say.
Yeah, the thing funny was they were like, in the movie, I haven't watched it yet. I don't have Netflix. Maybe you guys can watch it, do a review of it or something. But they said in the movie, there's three of the eggs, and you have to get all three of them. And together, all three are worth $100 million.
Oh, so it's like Pokemon, you get three of them, and then the fusion card. And okay, never
mind. No, it's kind of like Dragon Balls.
You know, when Vince McMahon pulls up, and he gets out the limousine, and these motherfuckers are cheering. I was like, what the fuck? Like, why are you cheering so you don't get fired next? Like, it just wasn't a good visual. Like, why would Vince McMahon should be getting booed?
When my boss come in, I'm not standing around her car and like, yay, welcome to work. Like, I'll just be like, hey, when they
walk back. They don't do that to you at your job?
Everyone should have gave him the stink eye. Like, he's just walking down the hall just the way he was before. Like, he's just the man and, you know, his shit don't stink. And everyone's just giving him the stink eye. That would have been more, you know, apropos.
Like, I understand it's wrestling. I understand things need to be over the top. But can we just base things in reality a little bit?
So, on this, at Survivor Series, which is where this egg made its debut, which actually brings back memories of the old Survivor Series where we also had an egg. I'm surprised nobody ever made that comparison on commentary. Like, I wonder what's going to come out of that egg or something. But
all over Twitter.
Okay. No commentary, but I would listen to a podcast where somebody made that comparison that Vince McMahon loved eggs and Survivor Series.
All right, so that ends up, the egg ends up getting stolen. And so Vince announces that all the superstars from SmackDown and Raw will need to be present on Monday Night Raw to be interrogated about the location of this egg instead of just calling the police. So,
again, don't nobody want no fucking mystery. What is this, Knives Out?
In the last, like, 2 hours.
You said what?
It's a fucking wrestling show. How about, here's an idea. Why don't we put the main focus on wrestling?
And so this happened in the Barclays Center, and the next night they were in the same building. Everybody's on Raw. What turns out happening is that, why can't I think of his name? I just had it in my head. The guy who stole the egg.
Oh, Austin Theory.
Yeah, Austin Theory took the egg in order to take a selfie with it. And he said the only reason he took the egg was because there was so much security around that he didn't feel comfortable taking a selfie there, so he left with it. How does that make any sense? There's so much security around, but I was able to escape with this egg.
It wasn't in Vince's office, but Mustafa, is he ripping off Prince Pretty's gimmick with the whole selfies?
Yes. However, if he said that it was because security was around, that was with Vince McMahon. Though. I was going to say he took the selfie in the office where the case was. But then again, that was with Vince McMahon, so never mind.
And then also on this episode of Monday Night Raw, we had Seth Rollins get attacked by a fan who was completely mentally deranged. And it even showed that he had been communicating with a fake Seth Rollins account.
That was Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins took that man's money. That's bullshit. He said, listen, Seth Rollins, when I see you, I'm giving you these motherfucking hands. And he saw his opportunity and he took it. All right, let's tell the true story here.
But so we'll get to that actual entire thing right there. But I said the funniest thing was that what the hell is going on in the Barclays Center? Like, the Barclays Center is one of the most restrictive places in the United States right now to go and see anything, because you got to have your you have to be vaccinated to go and see anything at the Barclays Center and Madison Square Garden or in anything in New York. So you got that going for it. But then Vince McMahon's egg gets stolen in the Barclays Center. Bret Hart got attacked in the Barclays Center at the Hall of Fame 2 years ago. And now you have Seth Rollins get attacked by a fan. I thought this was supposed to be a tough city. Or maybe they're just too tough. The fans just fucking bulldozing security and wrestlers and everything. Go ahead.
You know I don't watch Raw. But, you know, my phone's going off. Oh, my God, you know, fan text Seth Rollins. When I first looked at it, I side-eyed it. I'm just like, that looks a little too staged. Because it almost looks like he damn near ran out of Gorilla. But, you know, obviously that's not what happened, because Seth was legitimately pissed. And, well, we'll get into it, but it's like, fuck these fans talking about Seth should have kicked his ass. And we'll get into why he didn't.
Yeah, and we can get into that right now, because you had people like Chavo Guerrero making tweets saying, I miss when the wrestlers were tougher than the fans. And he caught a lot of flack for that. And the fans were chanting to Seth Rollins when it happened to kick his ass. And Seth didn't really miss a beat afterwards. He was pissed. And the good thing about him being a heel was he was able to be pissed in character and still just be talking shit.
Then I saw him both ways.
What I loved about it is Becky Lynch was in the background like, yep, if you want to.
Then I saw somebody was trying to make it about race. He's like, I heard Seth call him boy. It's like,
come on, I heard it too, but come on now, what else are you gonna say? That's whatever,
here's my thing,
at least he ain't calling the n-word.
That would have been funny.
This is the rule of thumb in wrestling.
He's Mexican or Hispanic. I ain't gonna say Mexican, he's Hispanic. Go ahead.
Shit, I forgot I was saying that. Oh, the rule of thumb in wrestling, if you jump over that barricade, it's open season to whoop that ass. So, Seth, I think he just didn't get the opportunity to whoop his ass because the guy kind of took him down, but then you had, like, security on top of him trying to break him up and all that good stuff. But he should have whooped his ass if he had the opportunity.
Dude, okay.
Let it stop Dax Wheeler.
We all know that back in the day, security or not, they would have dragged him into the back and they would have tuned his ass up. But in today's day and age, let's just say while security was holding the dude, if Seth decided to get a quote unquote cheap shot and like kick him in the face, they could sue WWE, which is why Seth probably contained himself.
And did not attack him. Because I thought once you cross a certain threshold,
you can sue for anything.
All bets are off because you are, I mean, literally.
But that's a card. Like, legally, you can sue for anything.
So the guy was no longer a threat.
Got a job to protect him.
We pretty much had a whole case about where self-defense ends and begins kind of in this country. And I guess the line keeps getting pushed further and further, but in this instance, the guy was no longer a threat to Seth anymore once all the security and refs had jumped on top of the guy. So Seth couldn't go and get that cheap shot with millions of smartphones around. Like, if this was back in the day and there were no smartphones, he could have probably got a cheap shot in because when he got tackled, the camera quickly cut back to the ring and the commentary stopped talking about what was going on there. It's like, hey, we're all worried about Finn Balor here in the ring while they were trying to sort out what was going on the stage. And then the next time they went back to the stage, you saw Seth standing in front of the Titantron or up the stage from where the incident happened and heading back to Gorilla. So,
and it's like, before all you marks start talking about how weak Seth Rollins looked, instantly he put him in a goddamn guillotine hold. But then with the security guard trying to get dude off of Seth, he got a hold of Seth Rollins' hair.
Yeah, and that guy, you know what I'm saying? That guy had about 100 pounds on Seth.
Right. You know what? If left to his own devices, Seth probably would have put him to sleep.
No, that was a shitty looking guillotine. He wouldn't have put him to sleep with it, but
Dude didn't look like he's in the best of shape though. I don't know. He did come sprinting out that motherfucker.
he gored the fuck out.
That spear looked kind of good. That's why again I was like, that looks kind of staged.
Like it's Rhino.
It's top dollar.
But no, what really the thing would have been if Seth had done all of that and attacked him, kicked his ass and stuff, and then everything else came out about how the guy had mental deficiencies. Now they're looking at Seth like, cancel this guy. He beat up this guy with mental deficiencies. Right. And like, how tough are you? Like, oh, you're supposed to be so tough. And this guy like was taking it all. Like, you know how today is. Like, even though all of that shouldn't even matter, when it's like, look, I'm trying to make it backstage to my wife and young child and all of that stuff. So like I said, if this was back in the day and there were no smartphones around, Seth would have got away with a lot more in that instance, I think, of getting a little bit of retribution on the person. But because they're a publicly traded company and there's millions of people here watching, I think that Seth handled it as a consummate professional in the way that it should have been handled in this day and age. But yeah, like you said, when you cross that, I think if that guy had gotten a ring, it would have been a completely different thing. But because the referee was so quick to react and Seth wasn't up there by himself and having to fend for himself, it was a lot different. It was a lot different from when, what was that, Triple H and Stone Cold were in the ring and a fan ran in and Triple H was kicking the shit out of the guy that jumped in the ring because the ref didn't even react in that instance. So it was like, hey, we're in here to fend for ourselves. We don't know if this guy has a knife on him or a weapon or something like that, so we're going to beat the shit out of him.
And that's the point someone made. It's just like, WWE got to up their game in terms of security. If dude was really that deranged and pissed at Seth, now, I don't know, Barclay, they maybe have a better way to make sure no weapons get in, but imagine if he charged with a knife. It would have been all she wrote for Seth.
Right, so, like I said, I'm not mad at Seth for handling it. Everybody would have handled it different. We all say what we would have done. But because of the position that Seth holds in that company, I think that he purposely made the right decision. And but as quick as everything happened, all he could do was react. It wasn't any time to really think about probably kicking that guy's ass. It's like survival mode. Just choke this motherfucker until we ain't got to choke him no more.
And you have no idea what's going on. Like, literally, that dude was right on top of him.
And let's not forget, Seth had literally just finished a pretty intense match with Finn Balor as well. It wasn't like he went out there and did a squash match and was fully rested. Like most the average person out here wouldn't last in a 1 minute match, let alone a 10 minute match. a lot of people hit the ropes twice and be like, "All right, this ain't for me." We watched Tough Enough back in the day, goddammit. So
I was listening to the Jim Cornette drive-thru episode that just aired, and Jim Cornette basically said that the problem is complacency, because we haven't had issues lately with people jumping in the ring and stuff like that. So, you know, security is lax. He said there probably was nobody over in that area, period, which is probably why they took that opportunity to come from the way he did. But like Chris Black said, what's scary about this situation is if that dude would have had a knife, Seth Rollins would have been done. That's a scary thought.
Yeah.
All right. Now, real quick, let's go through Survivor Series, which I thought was a pretty good show. Chris Black disagreed. I don't know what Mustafa's thoughts were on the show. So I'll go to Mustafa and say, what did you think about Survivor Series overall?
There was a lot of good, there was a lot of bad. I thought the opening match, hands down, was, I think the bookend of each, the beginning and end of the show were the best matches. Everything in between was so-so. I thought each of the 505s were meh at best. That's my overall opinion.
Becky No Cheeks was what came out of this show.
Yeah, the reason why I say that I didn't like it was because, like Mustafa said, best two matches was the women's championship match and the men's championship match. I will give Randy Orton the tag team championship match, like, I don't know, okay, because it was pretty good, which all ended in definitive wins. The mother matches, fuck the mother matches. This was just another example of WWE not being able to put anyone over specifically. Like the pre-show match, that was bullshit. That was bullshit.
Which, for those of you listening, the pre-show match was Shinsuke Nakamura versus Damian Priest.
When Damian Priest loses by disqualification. Seriously? But I guess that's why I was on the pre-show.
I like the new character, though, because they continue the mean streak of Damian Priest. Now he's kind of being more Punishment Martinez again.
I guess. We'll see where that goes. And then, like, the 5-on-5 men's match, you have, like, what, 3 countouts? Are you fucking kidding me?
Oh, yeah. The women's Survivor Series match was ass. Like, that was the worst thing on the entire show. I actually enjoyed the men's Survivor Series match.
It was not the worst thing on the show. The worst thing on that show was that Domino's piece of bullshit.
Oh, yeah, the 25-man Battle Royal.
That was diarrhea.
Okay, I got a fun little game. Maybe we can do this because I'm kind of putting you guys on the spot. Maybe we can do this on the slam board. Out of the 25-man or whatever Battle Royal, pick 5 guys that is going to be next on the chopping block, and let's see who gets the most. I'm dead serious. All of these guys don't fit the they can main event WrestleMania, with the exception of Montez Ford, and that's and I'm being generous with that. AJ Styles, they're not gonna let him go.
Cesaro could, but they just
could. They won't give him the chance, but he could. Sami Zayn could. They won't give him the chance.
Well, as of February or January of next year, you have Johnny Gargano's contract is up. Johnny Gargano, Kevin Owens, is it Kyle O'Reilly?
Yeah.
And Sami Zayn. So
I know one thing. It's going to be a sad day. They let good old Gender go.
Okay, first of all, don't be speaking evil stuff like that into existence. I'm looking at the list of people now. These are the people who I think are going to be on the chopping block. Angel Garza, Chad Gable, Commander Azeed. I want to say Dolph Ziggler, but I'm not sure on that one. Drew Gulak, Humberto, Ivar, T-Bar, Otis.
Just say everybody in that 25-man battle royal besides.
It'd be easier to say who's going to stay.
Yeah, Omos and AJ Styles are staying. Okay, we get it.
I'd actually let go of Omos. I'm just being real.
Omos is the new Braun Strowman. Just like Doudrop is the new Nia Jax.
Okay, how much mileage they gonna get out of this dude? He can't work. He's not another Braun Strowman. He's another Giant Gonzalez.
That's what Vince likes. So,
and you see how far his career went. What's your favorite Giant Gonzalez match? And you can't say against The Undertaker.
Is that the only match he has? Here's my thing, my biggest thing with Omos. He doesn't look like anything. Like, he literally looks like just some random guy off the street walking to work when he comes to wrestle.
Every time I see Omos and his gimmick, what he wears to the ring, I'm like, ain't that the dude from New York Undercover from back in the day?
Oh, yeah. Malik Yoba.
Yeah. He reminds me of just like a basketball person. Like, it's like, I'm not saying like Shaquille O'Neal, but you know how Shaquille O'Neal did the little match at AEW? Almost just seems so out of place. Like, he's just a celebrity that just, I don't know, they gave a contract to.
You know the difference? Shaq took bumps.
Yeah. Yeah. Facts. I agree with that.
Shaq went through a table.
Shaq, that's sad. Shaq had one match, and his one match was better than anything Almost has done.
That's messed up. They lied to Shaq about that table spot, though. That was messed up. They had to do dude like that.
I don't even know what you're talking about. I can't wait to watch that show.
So he had asked, would there be something under the table to protect him or something? And I think it was QT Marshall's like, yeah, we'll have some pads under there or something like that. And they weren't up. So they said he got in the back and he was a little bit mad about it. He wasn't big mad, but he was a little mad.
It's Shaq. He can only be big mad.
Come on.
They didn't lie. They were mats. They're mats.
Right, there's a mat on the floor.
It's not like Mondo Lucha. It's not hardwood floor underneath the table. Oh, man. But, yeah, so that was pretty much Survivor Series. Like I said, I thought it was good. Not going to go match by match. If you saw it, you saw it. WWE, with all these releases that we mentioned earlier and the week prior to that, the reason we stopped watching is we said there's nothing to get invested in because you could get invested in somebody today and they could be gone tomorrow.
Okay, let me just back up for a second. I think we need to spend, at least I think, 5 minutes on how I think WWE, or maybe it's just me, they totally missed the boat. Big E should have went over Roman Reigns. Everyone's just like, well, you can't make Roman Reigns look weak. So what, you can make Big E look weak?
Oh, yeah. I said Big E should have beat Roman Reigns. I don't even care if they had to have a miscommunication between the bloodline or whatever the case was.
Whatever they wanted to do, he should have won. It would have meant more for Big E than Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns wins this, like, so what?
And the only reason, I think, besides wanting to keep Roman looking strong, is Roman was the only person that won their match from Raw. Like, SmackDown... Roman won the only match for SmackDown. Raw swept everybody except for...
technically, the pre-show match, but that was a disqualification.
Yeah, and the thing that's whack about that as well is not going to be followed up on. You're not going to have Roman talking about how everybody on SmackDown sucked or whatever. That's not even his character of being a team player. So it didn't, Survivor Series is, they've made it not matter at all. Beside, between that, having the draft like 2 weeks before the pay-per-view or whatever, and like these people were on the previous brand several weeks before, but now they're so loyal to this new brand. They just made it just another show that has a gimmick that makes zero sense. But yeah, I agree. Big E should have went over Roman Reigns in this match. Or if there was, if it was AEW and they had time limits, should have went to a draw. Anything besides what they did.
Right.
Mustafa?
I had something to say, but I forgot it now. I was waiting to throw my two cents in, and I just kind of forgot what I was going to say. So,
what do you think? Big E should have went over?
Big E should have went over, but there was no way in hell that he was. So I knew that was on the possibility of things that would never, ever happen in life. Because we don't know, but Roman Reigns ain't going to lose shit.
Yeah, but you know what? That throws in that I think I tweeted, I missed the days of anything could happen in WWE. If Big E would have pinned Roman Reigns, number one, that shows that he's not unbeatable. And you never know. Now people are going to be looking forward to Roman just might, he could potentially lose to this guy, you know, whoever he's in a feud with next. As of right now, he's going to steamroll through everybody, and we all know it.
And the one thing is that Big E should have won here. They got Big E going out here doing more media than anybody else in WWE has been doing besides The Miz right now. Like, Big E has been doing the introductions for all the big boxing matches lately. Amongst like the drug commercials, saying no to drugs and everything. Pretty much, he's pretty much being Titus O'Neil, but being a WWE champion. But they're not giving him anything. Like, it's like, yo, I'm doing all this goodwill out here, but I can't win a match. That matters, but doesn't matter. So, all right. Now we get to move on to NXT, where Mustafa has some thoughts about NXT 2.0. I don't know what these thoughts are, but go ahead, Mustafa. It's all your show now.
Okay, there's so much to talk about in NXT, but at the same time, not much to talk about in NXT. So right now, the programs they got going on right now is they got this whole thing going on with Carmelo Hayes. Yeah, there we go. So the whole like last show was just built up to the triple threat match between him, Johnny Gargano, and Pete Dunne. That was absolutely fantastic. Of course, Carmelo Hayes going over in that. The grizzled young vets are jobbers now. They're not important anymore. Tommaso Ciampa is putting over nobodies. So yeah, that's what's going on in NXT. So me and True Element had a conversation off the air about NXT, and I basically told him, I said, NXT is about as hard to watch as Raw and SmackDown nowadays. It's all these, I don't say no-name people, but I get it that they're new and they have to make names for themselves and they need to be put in, you know, I don't say necessarily high-profile matches, but, you know, in important matches to get themselves over, but there's no reason Tommaso Ciampa should be in a ring for 15 minutes with a Grayson Waller having a competitive match. It doesn't make any sense. There's no reason why the grizzled young vets who have been on the top of the tag team division in NXT are just doing random jobs to new random people for no reason. It's just sad. And Tommaso Ciampa has been on record saying that, you know, he's not sure if NXT 2.0 is for him. So a lot of people want to go, you know, so I don't blame him. I would want to go too if I was in this new NXT, because this new NXT is doo-doo butter. So you're right here first, folks. NXT 2.0 equals doo doo butter.
You sound so sad about it.
I am, because NXT was so exciting, and like they're not even doing shows anymore. Like, one of the things that was great about Royal Rumble weekend or WrestleMania weekend is going to the NXT shows. They're not even doing them anymore. So when I'm at the Royal Rumble in 2 months, like, that's it. It's just the Royal Rumble. That's all we get. Raw, SmackDown is in another city. And there's no NXT show. Okay. WrestleMania is 2 days. So, and then they got Raw, SmackDown, which is going to be in the same place. But I don't want to see Raw, SmackDown. I want to see NXT. I want to see the old NXT.
I just want to know, why don't they just call fucking Braun Breaker fucking Steiner with the whole, you got a 33. Come on, man. Why do they keep alluding to he's a Steiner without actually calling him a Steiner? Am I the only one that got bothered by that? Again, didn't watch it, saw it, saw the clips. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me.
One more thing I forgot to mention from Raw. We have a new 24/7 champion in Dana Brooke. And the visual of all of those guys standing around Dana Brooke not knowing what to do was hilarious. It took me back to... Man,
Black looks like another meme.
Yeah. It was like the Paige Van Zant's meme all over again. You can handle all five of us? But anyway, speaking of all five of us, what's going on over in New Japan?
All right, actually, so before we go there, do we want to talk about War Games?
Go ahead and talk about War Games.
That's your floor.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't want to cut you off, Chris Black. I didn't want to get us too far removed and then have to go back to NXT. War Games coming up, which is going to be not tomorrow Sunday, but the Sunday after that, is going to be War Games. And these are our amazing War Game matches. All right. Are y'all ready for this? We got Team Raquel, which is Cora Jade, Raquel Gonzalez, Io Shirai, and Kaylee Ray versus Team Dakota, which is Dakota Kai, Mandy Rhodes, Gigi Dolin, and JC Jane.
Yay.
See, the fact that the women's champion is in the War Games match doesn't sit right with me. And so that also means that team should be the one that wins.
Well, like they did last year and have her, that team lose.
See, but also what doesn't make sense is how is it her team when the women's champion is sitting there? Shouldn't it be the women's champion's team?
Dude, oh my fucking God. If this is just quote unquote developmental, don't do War Games anymore.
Shouldn't it be Team Rose? I am so confused. Go on. Anybody else giving predictions? Am I just jumping out the window?
I don't care who wins this. I don't care. I just hope this match. I hope it doesn't even happen. But
look, I got something positive to say. Stay safe, ladies.
I was about to say Mandy Rose in a War Games match. I don't know how I feel about that.
Please don't die. Please don't die. So I know we talked about a little while back that Vince McMahon likes Cameron Grimes but doesn't like his look. So they've been slowly but surely changing that. So he's in a program right now with Duke Hudson, and the week before last, he attacked him and cut off his beard. So now his look is starting to change. And now in this board game show, he is going to be having a hair versus hair match, Cameron Grimes versus Duke Hudson. Hair versus hair, so we know that Cameron Grimes, just based off of that and what's been happening, Cameron Grimes is going to lose.
I guess. Next.
Right. Next is going to be the NXT Tag Team titles. Is going to be Imperium, Marcel Barthal, and Fabian Achner versus either Kyle O'Reilly and Van Wagner or Elgato Del Fantasma. So that will become clear once we get closer to the event. Then we have the NXT Cruiserweight title, Roderick Strong versus Joe Gacy. I hope Roderick Strong wins this one. I can't see him losing to Joe Gacy. And then we have the War Games match, Team Old School, Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano, Pete Dunne, and LA Knight versus Team New School, Bron Breakker, Carmelo Hayes, Tony D'Angelo, and Grayson Waller. I'm going to go with Team Old School on this one.
Really? I think this is the time to... I think this is where the young people win and you get the rematch between, what's his name? Steiner's kid, and Tommaso Ciampa, which he probably will go over this time.
Well, as Vince McMahon used to say, that remains to be seen.
Yeah. I think I totally see the young guys winning this match by hook or by crook.
You got to remake it in the image of the immortal Vince McMahon. And as they keep saying on the internet, or the internet keeps telling me, I should say, they're erasing Triple H's legacy from NXT.
Okay. Well, let's just say this. We ain't got to have no long discussion. Just yay or nay. Are you getting sick and tired of these people talking about Triple H is going to leave? I'm getting sick of it.
Triple H ain't going nowhere. He can't be Shane McMahon. Triple H has more people depending on him than Shane McMahon had when he left.
Now, he is the cerebral assassin. He might be trying to usurp Vince McMahon one way or another, but he's probably just plotting right now.
Yeah, the only way that's going to happen is if he puts cyanide in his protein powder or something. But yeah, he's not going. Triple H isn't going anywhere.
After Vince McMahon dies, something just, I don't know, surprisingly just so happens to Stephanie McMahon. Like, I don't know, her brakes go out or some shit, and he's left in charge. Heard it here, folks. That got dark. I didn't mean to go that far.
Yeah, Mustafa's like, I'm not saying nothing. I'm trying to get this contract.
All right.
New Japan, what's going on?
Okay, so I'm going to have to apologize for anyone that follows me on YouTube because I actually did a review for the Battle of the Valley, but because my schedule has just been so fucked, I haven't actually had the time to record it. Now, I'm not going to give you the full review. I'm just going to give you some pointers that kind of happened. Josh Alexander, excellent match against Yuya Uemura, one of the graduating young lions. Well, actually, he's on excursion, so I don't know if he technically graduated or not. Will Ospreay defeats Ren Narita. Great match. Will Ospreay, they point out, is 10-1 this year for New Japan. His one loss only to Okada at Wrestle Kingdom. Moose versus Juice Robinson was a decent match. Everyone knew that Moose was going to win. Juice puts on a good fight. I'm wondering why New Japan don't want to like really give. Well, I guess it was against Impact, but I'm just going to vent for a second. I don't understand why New Japan does not give Juice Robinson a bit more of a push. I know it might be because I'm just kind of biased, but he's had a couple of U.S. title runs. I think that he deserves a little bit more of a push outside of the tag team division, but that's just me. But he had a good match with Moose. And at the end of the match, he got attacked by Jonah, the former Bronson Reed. I think Mustafa posted that on our slam board. And he's going to make a great addition to New Japan. Like his, I don't know, his ferocity was just a little different than what I remember from Bronson Reed. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm really glad they found a home.
Say what?
I'm really glad that dude found a home.
Yes, me too. And I'm glad he didn't, you know, everyone's, oh, they're going to go to AEW. They're going to AEW. No, some of these people need to go to New Japan, Impact, spread the love out. And I think Jonah will make a great addition. Everyone's clamoring for a Jonah versus Jeff Cobb, which should be interesting if they ever get there. Okada versus Buddy Matthews. Great debut for Buddy Matthews. Obviously, he did not beat Okada. But Okada did. I mean, Buddy Matthews played the heel for the majority of this match. But after he, you know, fell to the Rainmaker, Okada offers a handshake. Buddy Murphy takes it. Again, great debut for Buddy Matthews. Then out comes Will Ospreay, the real IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. And he comes out. So we got some Wrestle Kingdom
matches already set. So night one, we have Okada taking on Shingo Takagi, the G1 winner taking on the World Heavyweight Champion. And the winner of that match is going to face Will Ospreay on night two. I'm not going to give any predictions. I'll save that. But that's what's going to happen. And the thing is, they're supposed to be three nights to Wrestle Kingdom. I just found out today. I might be a little behind again. Work schedule. Anyway, life schedule. But they're saying that night three is going to be New Japan versus Noah. And it's not going to be on the NJPW World website, not right away. I think they're going with a neutral pay-per-view. So is it really Wrestle Kingdom? I don't really count that. But supposedly January 8th, night three, Wrestle Kingdom. Don't think so. We can just go with January 4th and 5th, night one and night two. They can call whatever you want on January 8th. They shouldn't call it Wrestle Kingdom. Right now, you have Best of the Super Juniors going on. I said before, I'm not going to be covering that and the World Tag League, but I'll give you some insight on who's winning right now. Best of the Super Juniors, you have Kanemaru with 8 points, Hiromu Takahashi with 7 points, Taiji Ishimori at 6, El Desperado, who's the champion, at 5 points, which is just weird, Bushi, Daoki, Robbie Eagles, El Fantasmo, Taguchi, Master Wato is at 4 points, and Yo is at 2. Looking at this, because I never did a predictions of who I'm thinking to win, El Desperado is probably going to, I don't want to go for the cheap Hiromu Takahashi, but I can't see anyone else really coming up and getting some points. I'd like to see Ishimori take on El Desperado, but we'll see what happens. World Tag League. When, in the league with 8 points, you have Tetsuya Naito, who returns after injury at the G1. Naito and Sonata's at 8 points. You have the United Empire, Hanare, and Great Okan. Bad Luck Fale returning with Chase Owens. The Dangerous Techers, the current IWGP Tag Team Champions, Zack Sabre Jr. and Tai Chi. Tanahashi and Toru Yano. And Yoshihashi and Hiroko Goto. All those teams are at 6 points. And you got Evil and Yujiro Takahashi, Kojima and Tenzan, and the Gorillas of Destiny at 2 points, which is really disappointing. And then you have a couple teams at 0 points. I'm not even going to go over that right now. The winner of this World Tag League is going to be taking on the tag team champions, which is the Dangerous Techers, at Wrestle Kingdom on one of the nights. Looks like it's going to be Tetsuya Naito and Sonata. Unless they face the United Empire's Hanari and Great Okan, and they lose to them in the finals, and then they face the Dangerous Techers, which I can see happening. So my guess would be United Empire, Hanari, and Great Okan. That's just my prediction. Other than that, NJPW is picking up some names for their new upcoming tapings of NJPW Strong. They have names like Jonah, the Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels, and Eddie Kingston. So right now, we have Jay White taking on Christopher Daniels. That should be a good match. Again, these are tapings, so they're going to spread them out over a number of weeks. Jonah will be taking on David Finlay. Alex Zane will be taking on Minneapolis' own Aria Davari. Eddie Kingston, to be determined. The DKC will be taking on TJP, who was a member of the United Empire. Brody King takes on Dave Dutra. And you got Carl Fredericks and Kevin Knight, who is one of my favorite Young Lions. Black guy, Kevin Knight. Big future ahead of him versus Bateman and Mysterioso. So looking forward to those matches on NJPW Strong. Other than that, that's all I got.
Yeah, go ahead.
One more thing. When you saw Tomohiro Ishii, he was carrying the Never Open Weight title, which he won from Jay White at Battle in the Valley. I forgot that was the main event. I kind of stopped at Okada's match, but he did defeat Jay White for the Never Open Weight title.
Yeah, I was going to say that Christopher Daniels thing was shocking for me, even more than Jonah, because we knew I knew Bronson Reed was probably going to end up in New Japan rather than anywhere else. Because I made the comment earlier about AEW and big guys don't really win in AEW, so it wouldn't have made a lot of sense for him to go there. There's no spot right now.
I'm having a difficult time trying to figure out who they're going to put up against Eddie Kingston. I don't want
whoever to think Moxley would have been going up against.
Just a toss-up.
Right. And Xavier Mustafa, what's going on over in Impact?
Well, right now in Impact, you have Shawn Macklin, who is the number one contender for the X Division Championship. You got a feud going on between Eddie Edwards and Moose. There's a continuing feud with the Bullet Club and the Good Brothers this week. Well, I won't say this week, last week, because we're recording this on a Thursday, so a new episode of Impact has aired, but I have not seen that yet. But Gallows defeated Hikuleo, and then Josh Alexander wrestled Suzuki, the wrestler, not the car company.
I got to see that match.
I hated that Carl, not Carl Anderson.
Gallows?
Yeah, Gallows went over Hikuleo. I feel like Hikuleo looked like such a big deal in AEW, but then the way that he's being utilized with the Impact relationship has made him look very weak.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess they're getting away with it because he is kind of not young lion new, but he is fairly new. But still, a dude that size, a dude is huge. Speaking of huge, what's Morrison doing?
Morrissey.
Yeah, I was like,
Morrissey.
I was confused.
He's in the unemployment line. I don't know.
Yeah, not much of anything right now. I think they're trying to find him something to do.
Hikuleo.
So I got a question I want to propose to you guys before we wrap this show up. How are we still feeling about this forbidden door? Is this still a thing? I think it's more like a forbidden screen door now. Like,
well, it's not really anymore.
Okay, so Tony Khan did say that, or was it Tony Khan? But they said that this isn't just something that is going to be a flash in the pan now. Like, they've got like long term plans with this. So I don't want to say it's a stereotypical, just let it play out. But I mean, that's kind of what they're saying, because like all the real mix-up matchups haven't happened yet. I will not be a happy man until a heel Jay White goes over and challenges CM Punk. I don't give a fuck who wins. I just want to see that match. Will Ospreay, why the hell haven't you been on AEW yet? Like, all these big names, but I guess they have nothing to do with them, and they don't just want to bring somebody in, and God forbid someone else gets over on AEW. I have to say that AEW has been very one-sided with this whole Forbidden Door shit. It's kind of selfish looking. I can see why Impact's like, yeah, fuck you. But at the same time, it's like, even Impact's not looking good with this deal. I mean, I guess they're just happy for the exposure.
Well, the deal has ended with Impact. That ended 2 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago.
So sad. So there's now, so much they can do.
Yeah, so now it's just with GCW and New Japan. Yeah.
That's so sad.
And I think it's still there with NWA, but NWA's got their own things going on right now, and they're moving in a direction that they feel works for them right now. So
because I haven't looked it up, why did they end with Impact? Was Impact's like, we're not getting over? You guys are getting all the glory?
No, it was a contract for a certain length of time. So they knew. It had an end date.
But they can renew it?
Yeah, they could bring it back whenever they want to. But
So basically it didn't end on bad terms.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
And I want to throw this out there before we go too. I just saw this on Twitter, I believe it was, and you guys can just respond to it if you have any opinion on it. Somebody was saying that AEW owes it to Ring of Honor to pick up their talent or to buy them out, because if it hadn't have been for Ring of Honor, All In would have never happened. Thoughts on that?
That's kind of like they were saying, like, New Japan should be mad at the Bullet Club because they became a big deal and then they left. Like, you're the bookers. You control that stuff. If you don't understand all the possible outcomes of anything that you do, you shouldn't be in business. No, fuck that.
Yeah, I don't think they should, you know, you should be thankful or whatever, but because it was a talent, what it basically showed was it showed Cody Rhodes that a bunch of indie guys, quote unquote, could sell out Madison Square Garden. And yeah, that might have been, you know, the catalyst for them to say, okay, we can really do this. So, no, I think it was kind of a mutual thing because guess who else got shine? I mean, Ring of Honor did. They sold out the Madison Square Garden. So, no, I don't think there's any thanks in order.
Yeah, I was like,
you owe us.
Yeah, I was like, it's kind of like one of those things. It's not their fault for getting over. Like,
right, exactly.
Like the difference is they decided to capitalize on it and push the momentum forward. You guys was like, wow, that's nice, but it's too risky for us to keep going out there and trying to do that every week.
Yeah, we're just going to rely on Sinclair.
And you see where that got you.
Right.
Back to me. Oh, okay.
All right, so.
See, I can see Vince McMahon cutting that promo.
I am inevitable.
You could not live with your own failure. No, actually, Triple H should say that. Nah, right. Let me stop. Let me just stop.
Yeah. They're going to erase you from the Peacock Network, your whole segment.
It's your man finger snapping his own roster.
Right.
So, anything else going on Impact?
No, that's about it. There's still a lot. They're circling. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it.
Who looks to be the next challenger for Moose, or it just really hasn't been decided yet?
Is that Eddie Edwards and Moose right now is the program? I don't know who they're leading to go after that, but
I will say Moose is putting in some good work. I will say that.
I give Moose some credit.
Well, if you guys got nothing else, we can go ahead and close it out. Give everybody your social medias.
All right. You can catch me at Xavier Mustafa on Facebook and on Twitter. You can also catch my solo podcast, XM Cinema, wherever you're listening to your podcast. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button there. And you can catch my solo podcast also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at XM Cinema.
You can catch me on Facebook and Instagram at The Natural Chris Black. Follow me on Twitter at @the_natural_CB. Don't forget to check out my YouTube channel where I cover all things New Japan. And I'm going to hit the gas January 1st. I'm going to hit the ground running. I know I've been doing all talk about how I'm going to build this channel. You're going to see some action behind it.
And you can catch me at SlamcasterTE78 over on Twitter. You can also check us out, obviously, wherever you get your podcast from. Be sure to share it with those that you know that might be interested in something like this. Also, be sure to subscribe and ring that bell over there on the YouTube. Saturday Night Slamcasters, completely different content from what you get over there. And like I said earlier in the podcast, I'm going to be stepping away from the actual podcast episodes for a while, probably 3 to 6 months. But I will still be popping up occasionally on the podcast. And working on a project possibly for the YouTube channel. And also on my time away, I'm definitely going to be doing a lot of marketing for the podcast, especially trying to push our Discord, which you guys can go and check out our Discord server. It's Saturday Night Slamcasters over there. And looking to have a lot more action and things going on over there, whether that be gaming, pay-per-view commentaries and live reviews or watch-alongs over there. So be sure to check out the Discord if you haven't. It's completely free. Just go to Discord, Google Discord, and you'll find the website if you don't know what that is. Other than that, our next episode is going to be our end of the year, not predictions, but awards, where we're handing out match of the year, promo of the year, worst match of the year, best show of the year, worst show of the year, most improved, all the different awards for all the things that have happened in 2021. And then we'll have,
I can't wait for that. I'm already filling out the card.
And then we'll have one more show for you guys that'll happen the week of Christmas. And it'll pretty much be our predictions for 2022 on what we expect from the professional wrestling world. So, yeah, be sure to check out our next episode. Like I said, Year in Awards dropping for you guys on, when is that going to be dropping? For you guys on December 11th. And then the final episode of the year will be dropping on Christmas Day. So other than that, we up out of here. Holla at your boys. Come get slammed. Peace.